I'm so happy to be able to publish Money Moves with Millionaires on Latina Equal Pay Day. I hope you enjoy our conversation with Latina business owner Martha Grace.
Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, a podcast hosted by me, Natalie Torres-Adad, an international award-winning author, two-time TEDx speaker, and investor, along with Vera Egli, an investor, sales, and marketing pro, and multi-language podcaster. We will share the tips and tricks from interviews with self-made entrepreneurs, leaders, and those who have attained financial freedom while learning financial literacy in multiple languages. Hello, hello. Welcome to Making Money Moves with Millionaires. It's not Financially Savvy in 20 minutes, but I do have my brilliant co-host with me, Vera Egli. Hello.
Hi, everyone.
Tonight, we are excited because this is our third annual and bringing back our keynote speaker, who is really just one of those people that really are not just true leaders in their community, but they're the person you just want to be when you grow up. As far as, I mean, she managed to juggle every single task that you can think of as a business owner, an entrepreneur, a mother, a wife, a sister, a cousin, a friend. She does it so gracefully, and it makes sense that her name has the word grace in it. So without further ado, I'd love to welcome back Martha Grace. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me, you guys. It's always nice to hear kind words and be admired by somebody that you admire as well. So thank you, Natalie.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you. Man, the way she described you, does it sound exhausting? All the things that you do.
Yeah, it is exhausting for me.
And I'm sure I left out other tasks.
and just like
in the best way possible, it's exhausting.
Yeah. Yes. And just working off of that question, some of you have been to the live events where Martha spoke. You also attended the virtual summit. And you know, we just want to start the question by asking, Martha, tell us a little bit about what you do and why you do it.
Okay, awesome. The why is always my favorite question, but I'll start with what I do. We have several different companies that are vertically integrated. So one feeds the other, which is awesome. But the bulk of my day is really spent focusing on the real estate and the property management companies. So primarily in the real estate side, I'm the broker. So my job is to support the agents, make sure there's programs in place for them to succeed, creating different education platforms for them to learn, especially because we do take on a lot of brand new agents. This market has been hot. So you have a lot of people who are like, hey, selling real estate sounds amazing, and they're jumping in. So we had to make certain we had things in place to take on and educate new agents. So, and recruiting is really a big part of that as well, which to me, that was the most challenging. It was, you know, you're calling people, you're cold calling, which I had never cold called for our other businesses. So I'm cold calling agents saying, hi, I'm the broker, and I'd love for you to switch over to United. So kind of luring them from whatever company they're currently with. So it's the most challenging part of my day, but you could get 50 people who are like, no, I love my broker, I'm good where I'm at. And then you get that one yes, and you're like, oh, that was all worth it. So recruiting and retention for the brokerage. And then the property management side is completely different. That's just more a lot of managing staff, not necessarily the day-to-day activities with property management anymore, thank goodness. So primarily just doing a lot of HR type stuff there and making sure that they have the tools that they need. And we really only get involved if, you know, an investor has specifically requested us. So we have some people we've managed for 20 years and they're like, nope, I'm used to talking to Marta or Pat. And so they want me on the phone and they don't feel special if, you know, we hand them off to the property manager. So every now and then we still jump on calls for sure. But yeah, it's definitely something because we've been growing this for 20 years and creating systems and processes and protocols in place that now it's so smooth. And so although there is a lot of stress and work, it's just, it's different because it's more, it's very manageable, but it's more of managing others versus like doing the work yourself.
I think you probably just made all business owners' dreams come true when you said it's possible. Yeah. When after you really, because you spend a lot of time figuring out what works and what doesn't. It's not like just overnight you have all these systems in place. Even if you had some sort of a template to put it onto your business and people you work with, it doesn't always work.
Correct. You have to tweak it. Especially if you have the personality like I do, where it's really hard for me to delegate. It took me a really long time to figure out, oh, I could successfully train somebody to do a part of what I do and hand it off completely. And so it took me a long time. And obviously, you know, when you have the right staff member that, mm-hmm. you know, you can trust that consistently shows you that they can handle it, then it's easier to let go. But definitely that is one of the things I had to learn. I had a really difficult time with even wanting to hire anyone to, you know, replace certain parts of what I did. And now I'm so glad I did.
Trust is the hard thing, but I mean, if business owners listening to this, you can see that it is possible to have, not that fires aren't going to arise. You just kind of know how to put them out now. You don't freak out, right? So absolutely. That's fantastic. So sprinkle all of the why you do it all over this, please, because you have your deep reasons for why you do what you do.
Yes. That's always my favorite, just because I feel like it's so much of who I am, you know, no matter what business I am focused on for that day or that minute, my why has never changed. It's always been a combination of, you know, my mother, who is my inspiration. She was a housekeeper. She came as an immigrant from El Salvador because of the awful civil wars and all the unrest there. So they fled to California. And so our entire family, my mother, her sisters, her parents, so all of our grandparents and aunts and uncles, we watched them work extremely hard growing up to basically start over. They came with very little, and just to watch them succeed, you know, not just make it, but thrive and succeed and have businesses. And, you know, Natalie's mother is one of my inspirations as well. She was in HR department, but like just wore it with so much pride, and everybody there, I did a winter internship while I was in college with her, and everybody there had so much respect for her that I just thought, oh my gosh, like this is possible. So, right. So once you know in your head, it doesn't matter where you come from. It's about how hard you work and where you end up. So for me, 100%, my family, my mother was my inspiration because I saw them work so hard that I knew it was possible. And then my kids, obviously, once we started having children, I was working as a nurse initially when we started having babies, and my husband was already doing real estate. And so he was home with them a lot. And so I would get jealous because I'm doing these 12-hour shifts and I hear the baby in the background and he's laughing and, you know, all the things I was missing, right? And so he had been asking me to join him in this real estate business. And I thought, no, I don't want to sell anything. Like, I'm good. I'm getting paid to hold babies, right? I was doing postpartum and labor and delivery. And so I loved what I did. But again, having that 9-to-5 W-2 versus being an entrepreneur, he had all this freedom. And so I just had to kind of take that leap of faith that I could do it as well. And honestly, I will say I didn't necessarily leap with both feet. I kept my job part-time because I thought, well, what if I don't like it? Or what if it doesn't work out, right? And so I had that safety net, thank goodness, where I did work PRN, they call it. So kind of whenever you feel like it, and started doing real estate. And I realized, for one, I loved the freedom of being my own boss. But I also realized how much I still felt like I was helping people. I was helping people make their biggest purchase of their life and make a, you know, financially savvy decision. And I realized how needed that was. And especially in the Hispanic community, I started off doing some marketing in the Spanish Yellow Pages. And I was the only realtor on the entire book. It was like one mortgage broker and myself in that whole section for real estate or bienes raíces. And my phone blew up. And we would put signs that, you know, we would have one property. We were doing flips then, and we were doing them primarily in the Northeast, which is a predominantly Hispanic or Latino area. And so we would have a yard sign and it would say, habla español, and my phone would blow up. And so the beautiful part about that clientele is that they're so loyal. Like, they'll use you. They love you. They're so excited that you understand what they need or even just understand their language instead of having to go through their 12-year-old to translate. So they like would literally cry at closings. And so I cry, they're so happy, everybody's happy. So you get those warm and fuzzies that I never expected from a sales job, right? And so just fell in love with it. And so of course they recommend their mother and their aunts and their cousins. And so it just turned into this thing where it grew very quickly. So I was very blessed to have started with that community. That was definitely why we were able to do so well so quickly. And even in our rentals, before the real estate, we were doing rentals while I was working as a nurse. We would put a yard sign again that said that I spoke Spanish, and we would rent it that day. So even then, it was like the backbone of our success has been so much the community.
That's beautiful. And your bilingualism, right? One of your superpowers that sometimes people overlook or want to hide, and you embraced it. And I think you touched something really important. You said you pivoted basically from nursing to real estate to growing these multiple businesses now. What advice would you give someone? Because right now we're seeing that happening a lot with the current economy. Either people are being let go or starting new careers or thinking of starting a career. Any advice on kind of things that helped you navigate in order to succeed?
For sure. I would say just the fearlessness of going for it. And even if you do keep your job part-time, that's a question I get a lot from brand new agents. They're like, honestly tell me, can I succeed while I'm working part-time? Like, can I do this part-time? And I tell them, yes, as long as you're willing to work those long hours where you're at work all day and then you're doing showings, evenings, and weekends. That was my life for a long time, or for several years. Even dragging the kids along for showings and open houses and stuff like that. So as long as you're willing to put in the work, there's no reason why people can't make that leap, make a change while kind of keeping their other job as well. So it does take some grit and some long hours, but it's possible. So it's really just about going for it.
I was just thinking grit. I was just thinking grit. The obvious question that came up is, do you notice a difference between then and now in terms of the individual having the grit to balance a lot of things in order to pursue their dreams?
You mean other individuals or myself?
Other individuals, because I'm sure you talk to a lot of agents that eventually want to branch out on their own or do something, but they're kind of afraid, or they want to sell real estate or get into property management, but they're like, I don't want to leave my 9-to-5. And I never use those terms like millennials, Gen Zers, because I just think there is a difference in the generations. I do see that, but I don't like to label. But do you see a big difference between, like, let's say agents you brought on in the past to agents now? And is there more handholding to be had now versus then?
There is more handholding, but they also, I find that the younger agents who are like brand new to real estate and they're extremely young, they've also figured out a lot of really cool, like a lot of them do wholesaling, which your older, more experienced age, I won't say older, but more experienced agents are like, oh, you know, that's not real estate, or that's the wild west of real estate. You don't have to be licensed to do wholesale. So you have a lot of, they put up, I think, more barriers. The older agents are like, this is the way things have always been. And even for their marketing or for the way that they acquire clientele, like they, luckily, you know, a lot of the agents that we work with, we preach fortune is in the follow-up. So they always stay top of mind with their clients and get repeat business. So if you've been in the business for a long time, it's becomes pretty easy to stay successful and stay consistent with your closings because of the repeat business and referrals from your client base. But brand new agents, these new millennials are like, hey, I'm, you know, dabbling into either podcasts, or I, you know, have this huge following on TikTok, or I do a lot of, you know, whatever it's, or wholesaling. So it's like they are kind of reinventing the way that they want to do it. So we're teaching them a lot of stuff and they're like, okay, but what about this? And so it's almost made us dig deeper into like, okay, we need to learn wholesaling better so we can support these agents, and I need to learn social media a lot better. So even though there's a lot of handholding and different things, like newer agents will literally call me and say, let me read this email to you. And they want me to approve the way it's worded. Right. So that kind of stuff, where older agents would never, they're like, hey, I'm going to say what I want to say the way I want to say it. And I could care less how Marta wants me to word it. So it's a little bit different in terms of the handholding, but they are definitely gung-ho in so many different areas. And so it's exciting.
See, that to me is so nice to hear, because I hear too many times, oh, no one wants to work and this and that. But the way that you've approached it, it seems, is like, find out how they want to work, right? Mm-hmm. What are their strengths? What do they want to do? And maybe they might be more motivated or inspired to do it. Yeah. So that's, I think
real estate is perfect for millennials, because they're very much about they want to be their own boss and they don't want to have somebody telling them what to do. Like they want to work hard, but on their time and in their terms. And real estate is very much that career. So I think that's why it works really well.
And also fortune is in the follow-up. I'm a salesperson. So that's like music to my ears. I'm like, yes.
I love that. And it's repeated business that you end up getting in the long term, right? So I think that really makes the shift. And right now we're seeing, you know, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of unknowns that are happening for many people, you know, whether it's just in their mind or actually happening. Any habits or things that you're incorporating now to plan for the future? You know, the talks of what you should be doing during a recession, what you should be doing, maybe planning a couple years ahead. I think, and by the way, we'll give a disclaimer, we're not your CPA or CFE. This is all mere entertainment and education. But if there's any habits that you see that you already implemented and you're continuing to do in order to, you know, figure out what you want to do for the next couple of years. Because I think a lot of people are interested on what your mindset is as opposed to someone that's just starting out their own business.
Sure. Thank you. That's a great question. And a lot of it is about shifting, like you said, because things are different. Times are different. We're definitely getting into Airbnb, which is new and different for us again. So even after all these years, we're still learning and still dabbling in new things. So definitely making that shift because you can make so much cash flow with Airbnb versus a regular, you know, 12-month lease or 2-year lease, which is what kind of our bread and butter has been. So shifting there to kind of follow what the market is doing has been exciting. But also, I mean, our gameplay has always been saving a lot and investing a lot. We spend very little in comparison to, you know, what our cash flow is. So always saving up for a rainy day. And I think when you're an investor or a realtor, you always think feast or famine because you have these closings and you have these huge commissions and then there's a lag and then you have a closing and then there's a lag. So you always are preparing for that rainy day when you're an investor. So I think that's always been our mindset. So definitely save up. Ever since we had our son, we set up our whole life insurance in order to put a lot of money into that. And we maxed that out. From a young age, we started maxing out as much as we could put into our 401ks. So just putting away as much as you can. So it's not just sitting in your bank account. And you're like, oh, I'm so comfy and not motivated. So yeah, yeah, putting it away to where you can't touch it.
I remember you mentioned that and it at the virtual summit and the live one, and everyone's eyes kind of just went, what? Because you said stocks are stocks. If you want to invest in stocks, fine, but I go the way of whole policies. And that's just what's worked for you.
Yeah.
And is that still the case? Do you still focus strictly on that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do some stocks. I won't say we don't do any. And I think my husband enjoys that more because it feels like gambling. I think it's exciting. Like I don't love it as a strategy, but it's definitely exciting to see, oh gosh, it's up to blah, blah, blah. And you get so excited and then it's down and you're like, wah. So what I don't like about it is that it's so, you know, we can't control it. Right. So it's like, I love Tesla. We drive Teslas and their stocks are really low right now. And so I'm like, okay, cool. Let's buy some more. I don't let it really, like, it definitely for me, stocks has to be like extra money, almost like fun gambling money, where it's not anything that we need to survive. But, so that's why I'm not a fan of it because it doesn't matter. You can have a company that's perfect and amazing and something happens and their stock goes down. So, I've never been a huge fan of stocks, although obviously a lot of people listening would disagree with me because there are people who do really well day trading and things like that. I just have never really had the time. You know, we've gone to seminars on it, but never really had the time to master that. And the fact that I can't control that company that I'm investing in, I don't like.
I agree. I think that's really interesting. And yes, you're right. People will be like, you're crazy. How could you not love stocks? And the volatility of it all, I find just, there's just my opinion again, just entertainment purposes. I find it not right that you're like having palpitations and anxiety attacks because all of a sudden the market is down and there goes your cash, you know, and there's just so much juggling with retirement funds, but that's another podcast
And there's just so much political stuff that comes into play with it that I'm like, I can't even watch. Like when it's down, I'm like, don't even turn on the news. I don't want to know. Like,
yeah, I get it. But I respect that you said that because it was a big eye opener for a lot of people that were listening that day.
Yeah, I like the safe stuff. So I'm kind of boring.
Oh, boring is good. If it makes you more money, we're all about that too, right? Being a little more conservative in the side. And kind of picking back on what you're talking about, you know, what you're choosing, what your expertise is in, right? It's like you're not dabbling as much in stocks because that's not your forte, you could say. For those of them that are wanting to get into real estate, maybe they've never bought a rental property. This is their next investment. What is it that you like to tell new investors? Because I'm sure you've learned so many, the pros and cons of investing on your own as well as for your clients. What are your top advice that you would give?
Thank you. And please make sure to subscribe and leave your comments and reviews. To learn more about the podcast, check out the website and Instagram, Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, and watch interviews on YouTube and IGTV. To become a sponsor or hire us for your next workshop or speaking engagement, please visit financiallysavvyin20minutes.com. All it takes is 20 minutes daily to become financially savvy. Music by Nikki and produced by Robert DeLude.